Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Autism remains one of the most mysterious and challenging conditions for families to manage. From the nonverbal to high-functioning, families struggle to understand the autism spectrum and find supportive resources. Tonight, as we recognize Autism Awareness Month, we will share information, resources, and the story of a family living with it. My guests are Dr. Shanter Alexander, professor in Howard University's School of Education. She's a certified autism specialist. Also, Alyssa Ware, advocate and parent of an adult child on the autism spectrum. If you have comments, if you have questions, if you are looking for support or information about autism, give us a call right now. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Alexander, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Ms. Ware, thank you so much for taking the time and being willing to share your family's story.
Of course. Thank you for allowing me to be here.
Sure. Dr. Alexander, let me first start with you. We need a little autism spectrum 101. Obviously, those families who are challenged by it know. But there are so many who are unfamiliar with what it means. Can you talk to me about it?
Yes, of course. So autism spectrum disorder is a neurodevelopmental disorder having to do with just how the brain develops and how the brain functions. And it can be seen in autism spectrum disorder. It's a combination of repeated and repetitive behaviors, as well as challenges with social communication. Well, what do I mean by that? When we talk about social communication, we talk about the things that we take for granted, like can I understand when somebody's face is showing me that they are unhappy or they are growing upset or irritated? Can I interpret those social cues? Children who are on the autism spectrum disorder, as well as adults, have difficulty interpreting those social cues and understanding social gestures. When we talk about repeated and repetitive behaviors, we're talking about things like a term we call skimming. So do they do things repeatedly? Like many people might see things like hand flapping or maybe flicking of the fingers or spinning the wheels on a car. Do they do these activities repeatedly? So those are only a few examples of things that we would consider repeated and repetitive behaviors. And one other thing also relates to whether they are fixated on certain things. So you might have someone on the autism spectrum disorder who is really interested in talking about dinosaurs, and they will make everything in their day related to dinosaurs because that is a very keen interest, and we talk about that being a restricted interest. So those are some of the things that you would see, just a brief overview as it relates to autism spectrum disorder. The major things, social communication challenges and repeated and repetitive behaviors that are notable.
I mentioned in my intro that there is obviously a range of those who are dealing with autism spectrum disorder. You have, as I said, you have some who are nonverbal. Mm-hmm. And then you have, those who are, high functioning. Talk to me about the range.
Okay. Thank you for bringing that up. So previously, when we talked about autism, we had individuals who we would call high functioning. And they were the ones who, when we say high functioning, things, conditions like Asperger's disorder. So these are the individuals who would be known for having exceptionally high verbal skills or high intellectual abilities, cognitive abilities. And then you had low-functioning individuals who would be more challenged cognitively or intellectually. Well, that has changed. Now it is an autism spectrum disorder, that range. And how we look at it as in from a clinical sense is to consider the level of support that the individual needs. So how much support does an individual need? So individuals who are lower functioning as it relates to their cognition or their intellectual ability, how their brain problem solves and deals with information in the world around them, these individuals will more likely require more intensive support. So perhaps for children who are in school, they might require special assistance from a paraprofessional to get from one point to another, maybe even physically, or they might not be able to communicate with words and might need assistance maybe in using sign language. Those are the nonverbal individuals. And then you have other individuals who speak very fluently, have exceptionally high IQs. They are the ones that are essentially designing computer programs at age 15. So definitely, it is a wide range in how we determine the level that an individual would fall on in terms of functioning is how much support they would need to be able to function normally throughout their day.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight we are talking about autism spectrum disorder and how families are challenged by it. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. The number is 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Alyssa, I'm fascinated by your story. In brief, your daughter was diagnosed at 8, correct?
Correct.
How old is she now?
She's 19.
She's 19. So she is an adult. Talk to me about how you discovered it and briefly the health journey that the autism spectrum has taken your family on.
Sure. So, we started noticing challenges and really kind of limited language when she was 2 years old. So mm-hmm. I go into the pediatrician, I'm asking questions, I'm like, she's saying essentially one word at a time, I'm concerned about her development, I'm asking these questions. And the response that I got from the pediatrician was, "Mom, perhaps you just need to read to her more."
Mm-hmm.
And so I went home, I'm a young mom, I'm a new mom, she's my only child. And I'm going, okay, well, I just need to read to her more. So, I push through with that and I'm navigating. But in the meantime, we're in childcare centers. She's having challenges, social challenges with her peers at 2 and 3 and 4 years old as we continue to move through this. And she was being asked to leave childcare centers because they couldn't support her needs. They didn't understand what was going on and really what the source of her behaviors were. We ultimately ended up in public school because we kind of were like, well, the public school is going to have to help us kind of figure this out and what's going to happen, right? So we move her into public school, and ultimately they flag her and say, we think she might have ADHD. You might need to take her to see a specialist. We take her to see a specialist. They're like, yes, she has ADHD. And I'm going, that can't, like, this isn't it. Like, something else is going on, because they're telling me she has ADHD, she has anxiety, there's some sensory challenges, right? She's seeking different things, loud noises bother her ears. We're witnessing all of this. And I'm like, there has to be a commonality between all of this. So I started doing my own research. And that led me to call the doctor back who actually gave her the ADHD diagnosis. And I said, I just don't think this is it. And she said, I'm going to send you to somebody that is a specialist around, you know, autism. And I want you to go and meet with her. I'm going to set you up with a consultation. And at this point, Lauren is 7. And we're like, okay, we'll meet with her. And in 30 minutes of meeting with this clinician, she says, you're in the right place.
Wow.
And I'll tell you, it was the biggest relief for our family, because we're going, we don't know what's happening. We don't know how to support her. We don't know what's going on. And what we're hearing in our community is, you need to discipline her more, or don't let them label her. But yet we're trying to figure out, what is it that's happening, and how are we the best parents for her as she's moving through this journey of growing up and aging and figuring out who she is.
Wow.
So that's really what led us to ultimately at 8, her actually receiving her diagnosis. The other part that I'll just share is that upon her receiving her diagnosis, my husband says, I've dealt with many of these same challenges my whole life, right? And he is, you know, they have very similar strengths and very similar challenges. And he went and sought out his own diagnosis. And so I say all the time, I'm the minority in my house.
Mm-hmm.
They are the majority. I learn how to think like them. They don't learn how to think like me. And so that has been kind of our life for really the past 11 years.
So you're saying that your husband is also on the autism spectrum?
Correct.
I want to drill down a little bit more, not only about that, and where your daughter is, and we have so many questions that need to be answered, because, you know, after you're sharing this, now we're going to get to the rest of the story.
Yes.
But before we do, Dr. Alexander, it's my understanding that there is an event related to today's topic that you want to share with us, and I want to make sure that we get that information out there for our listeners.
Almost definitely. So the prevalence of autism is rising in the Black community, and at Howard University, we want to shine a light on that. We will be hosting a free virtual conference on Tuesday, April 27th, from 6:30 to 8 p.m., and we will be addressing some of the biases, the barriers, and the broken resources that the Black autism community experiences as it relates to just getting the help that we need. And so again, that event is Voices from the Black Autism Community. That is on April 27th from 6:30 to 8 p.m.
How can people find out more about it? Is there a website?
Well, we will be putting out a press release tomorrow, and there is a link that is on there that you will use to sign up. On the Howard University website, you will be able to find that. So you sign up for it and register for the event. Again, it is free. There is no charge. And there will be many families. Alisa Ware, she will be on there talking with us as well as other families that have children with autism and adults with autism. And we'll be discussing those challenges and ways to access resources together.
Thank you so much for that. So you said it's going to be on Howard University's website, howard.edu?
Yes.
Okay, very well. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about autism tonight. We're going to be sharing some resources for our listeners. Well, I want to let Crystal, calling from Alabama, know that we're going to be talking to her next. Also, Claudia, calling from Virginia, you are going to be after Crystal. If you're having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise that we will be picking up your phone call. We're going to take a quick break, but don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. Don't forget to download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone, and you can hear the program live in its entirety. As I said, if you're on the phone, hang on. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're recognizing Autism Awareness Month, sharing information, resources, and the story of a family living with it. My guests are Dr. Shanter Alexander, professor in Howard University School of Education. She is a certified autism specialist, also Alyssa Ware, advocate and parent of an adult child on the autism spectrum. If you have a comment, if you have a question about autism, resources, the like, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Crystal, calling from Alabama. Thanks for calling, Crystal. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thank you, everyone. I want to shout out to my dad, Jerome Kearney, for just giving me this opportunity. I am a single mother with two autism children on the spectrum. They are just my world. Being a young Black mom with two children on the spectrum can be very difficult because there are challenges and they have different personalities that they go through as they get older. I found out that my 14-year-old had it when he was two, and then my 8-year-old, I found out when he was three that he was on the spectrum with it. And it can be challenging, you know, raising not one but two young men that are on the spectrum. So I'm very blessed and fortunate that my children have came a long way with being on the autism spectrum.
Well, Crystal, thank you so much for sharing with us, and you know, continued strength for you as you continue to raise your sons. Thank you so much. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Claudia, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Claudia. What's on your mind?
I have a 16-year-old grandson that I am taking care of, and by him being a teenager, it's so much you go through. I've been back and forth with the school. They have changed him out of one school because of his behavior. I also go through it at home, and I guess it's because he's not with his mom and dad. That may be a part of it. But it's so much. And being a grandparent ain't easy, because you think you can just say, okay, I'm done. You're not done.
Your thoughts about what she's sharing with us, Dr. Alexander?
Sorry, I missed the first part.
What your thoughts about what Claudia is sharing with us, being a grandmother and with a teenage grandson on the spectrum?
Yes, you know, it's quite challenging. I did hear sense just a feeling of being overwhelmed. And that is very, very common in households and families with children with autism. For one, it's unclear what is causing the behaviors. And just having to explain things to the school system, having to explain things to your medical practitioners, it can be really, really overwhelming. So one thing that I would say to Claudia and other parents and caregivers is it's important to really pay attention to your own self-care. Very often, and I'm sure that Alyssa can speak to that as well, the challenges of feelings of anxiety and feelings of just being very stressed with the situation, it's very, very common. And so one of the ways that we advise is that caretakers and family members also seek out support groups. It is important to be able to just have a support group that can relate to what you're going through, because you are not alone. You are not alone in the situation. And I guess, Alyssa, you might be able to share a little bit more on some of the supports that are available with the work you do.
Alyssa, please. Sure. Go right ahead.
So when upon Lauren being diagnosed, exactly what you're talking about, Dr. Alexander, you know, that need for support and feeling like you're not in this world by yourself is so critical. And where I live and the county that I live in, there were actually very limited resources around as far as support was concerned. And so I actually started a support group in my community that blossomed because, again, just as you said, you're not by yourself, and there are a ton of other families out there that also want to, you know, gather together around, you know, autism and share ideas, supports, what's working for them, what are the challenges, you know, being able to voice that this is hard and it can be challenging, but there's also these bright spots and rewards and things that we can celebrate that other people may not even view as an opportunity to celebrate. And so, you know, finding that support within your community is going to be really key. And there are a number of support groups that exist within the DMV that can, and a lot of them since COVID have gone virtual. And so there's an opportunity just hop on your computer and be able to connect with other families just to say, you know, what's working for you? Where are your challenges, and how can we be supportive to one another? And that's been useful as we've journeyed through raising my daughter.
Can you share one or two that you believe might be most helpful for our listeners right now?
Sure. So in D.C. proper, there is D.C. Autism Parents. They are a fantastic support group. Full of resources. They have a website as well, they offer a support group once a month. There's also a support group with the Parents Place of Maryland, and again, you don't have to necessarily live in Maryland to take part in it or in D.C. These support groups are happy to welcome you in, and so the Parents Place of Maryland, which also has a website, and ppmd.org, and both of those are going to be able to connect you with other families that are going to be able to, you know, provide that support that it is that you're looking for. Mm.
So, Claudia, thank you so much for your phone call. We appreciate you sharing with us. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Alyssa, I want to go back to your daughter, Lauren. You said she's 19 now. Mm-hmm. What is she doing now?
Sure. So she is a double major in social work and music performance at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, and is, you know, living in the dorm. She is doing quite well. And of course, that didn't come without a lot of work and a lot of effort. And
a singing social worker. That's what we need.
Yes.
Please go right ahead.
So we, you know, she really, you know, both supports from our, you know, myself and my husband, as well as supports from the university. And she has her own community of support that she engages with in order to, really understand her, you know, how she best socializes, what it is that she needs and the supports that she needs to be successful as she moves into her, you know, her independence and whatever that will look like.
So talk to me about some of the specific issues that she's, you know, dealing with as she moves through a world that is not on the spectrum. You said she's in the dorm, and so what kind of challenges, barriers does she have to deal with specifically, and how does she handle it?
So as Claudia said, you know, I think teenage years bring their own set of challenges, right? They want independence. They want, you know, and especially when you talk about a young lady. So, you know, autism is four times more likely to exist in males than females.
Right.
And so even a lot of the community supports that exist tend to not have other females or young women involved in those groups. She told us when she was very young, stop taking me to those things, please, because I'm tired of being the only girl. Mm-hmm. But as we've navigated, you know, living in a dorm, it's a lot of people. There's a lot of social demands. And so we've had to work with the university to say, you know, how can we best support her in her dorm life? And so there are things like disability services came and spoke with everyone in her suite to talk about, you know, acceptance of difference and acceptance of how, you know, that they like need to over communicate with her because she doesn't understand nonverbal cues and subtleties and things like that. So, you know, the university has been very active in helping her to get those supports. She also has accommodations such as a single room, and because it can be challenging, so she shares a suite with other people, but she's in her own room because there are different sensory needs, et cetera, that can make it challenging for her to live with other people.
Explain that if you can.
Best for her.
Sensory mm-hmm. needs. Explain yeah. that, please.
So she is very sensitive to sound. So she could hear something clean across the room. And so you can imagine when you're trying to go to sleep and you're really sensitive to that, it can make it challenging for you to live in a room with other people. She also can, she can seek out certain things. So she likes the feeling of certain materials. So she has special blankets and she has special pillows and things like that to help give her comfort. And she'll, exactly as Dr. Alexander said, she'll stim, which again can create some social challenges at the college level if other students are living with you and they're kind of seeing kind of some of the things that you need in order to cope to get through the day, right? And because the stimming does serve a purpose, and I think it's really important to really raise up that for her, it serves a purpose in helping to calm, helping to relieve some of the anxiety that she may experience. And so we want to make space for her to be able to have the opportunity to do that in a way that's going to allow her to continue on and be successful in the dorm and at her academics.
How was that handled? You said the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, UMBC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, but any college campus. Young people, music, loud, hallways, echoing. Mm-hmm. College campuses have changed a lot, but in other ways, they haven't changed much since the Fred Flintstone days when I was in college. And mm-hmm. even in her own room, how was the noise managed for her?
So she has a number of strategies, and I think, you know, we have to go back to all of the therapies and supports that she's learned she'll say she has her coping chest. So uh-huh. there are things like she doesn't leave the house. None of us leave the house without earbuds. So she's so sensitive to sound that, you know, she takes earbuds with her. She might sleep with the earbuds if it's getting too loud in the dorm or it feels like it's too much. So there are a number of strategies that she's gained, and we call it putting it in her tool belt to help her to understand how can you live in this environment while still, you know, taking care of yourself and making sure that she's not overwhelmed and things are too much. And I will just say, you know, one of the strategies that we've taken as a family is we're very forthright with. So when we went and toured all of the universities that she wanted to apply to, we met with disability services. We talked to the universities. We wanted to understand how can you best support her because her autism is who she is. It's a part of her identity, and it's not going anywhere. So how do we allow her to live the life that she wants while also getting the supports that she needs?
Despite the challenges, she sounds brilliant to me. And, you know, I just a little bit, but I'm serious. We do need more singing social workers. You know, that's going to be a challenging career. And, you know, music is the wealth of life and can be a calming thing. And so I can only imagine what what she has the potential to become. Thank you for sharing that part of your family's experience. I have plenty more questions, but let me first.
If I may.
Sure, please go right ahead.
Just add on. I love how you said, Alyssa, that you went to the universities and you spoke with student services and you found out what was in place. So one of the things we're working on at Howard University, I've been in repeated conversations with our student services department, is how we can create a more neuro-inclusive environment at Howard. So one of the things that we need to know from parents is, what are the specific needs of your child who is entering college? It's important, just as Alyssa mentioned, that there are sensory needs there. So it's in blankets that her daughter would need, or textures. How can we help? I think that is the stance of all clinicians who are in this work. We need to know. I know for me, parents are the experts. You are the experts on your children. You live with them for many years before they enter my office, for many years before they enter my classroom. It is important to really voice who your child is. That helps so that we know how to provide the appropriate support. And don't feel bashful about it, because it is the only way that your child is going to succeed.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lisa calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Lisa. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. Good evening, Harold, Dr. Alexander, Alyssa. Wonderful topic. I love your roundtable, Harold.
Thank you.
Dr. Alexander, I'm in Fairfax. I do work with a young individual. He has Down syndrome, but I've recently, I'm following everything that you all said in total agreement, but I want to become a registered behavioral technician. Any ideas, source, I can go to for that, because that is key. Now I'm discovering to have a behavioral analyst within this field, a registered behavioral technician, which is an RBT, to work with families. And I want to work with more and more individuals within the immediate DMV area, because I know that it is a great need. And I do want to say to Alyssa, for her daughter, I think that's wonderful, and singing and casting your voice like in a like a melody, because I sing a lot to my client in talking, and that really captures a person with this type of disability. So I commend her daughter for that as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your question. At this time, we offer a course in applied behavior analysis. There is, not to my awareness within the School of Education, a program that would offer you the training to become a registered behavior technician, but there are lots of programs in the D.C. area that would provide that specific training, just not at the School of Education at Howard at this time.
Okay. All right. Wonderful. Well, hopefully I will seek out more. I do know the Autism Partnership Foundation offers it, free. But my dilemma is that the wording, just getting used to the terminology. I was just wondering if there was a place where I can work directly or study under a behavioral analyst. But I am still steadily seeking it out. And then also for Miss Claudia, with her frustration that she's in Virginia, if she's in the Fairfax area, for her 16-year-old grandson, maybe get him into, an inclusive community. I do know in Fairfax there is a chocolatier bakery coffee house that was created, owned by an individual. Her name is Camera, who has autism. And individuals with disabilities, they apply and they can work there. I think that's, you know, something wonderful. Just trying to give her some things that she hasn't thought about it. Look at the arc. So there's, you know, a few things out there, and I do wish her well, and take care of yourself as well, Miss Cameron.
Lisa, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Ronnie, calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Ronnie, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you. I just wanted to just chime in. My youngest son, he's 26, and he was diagnosed with autism when he was 2. And, you know, when we first heard the diagnosis, it was, you know, it kind of, you know, it devastated us, you know. But we just prayed over him, and we prayed about it. And, you know, the one thing that we decided, we were not going to tell him, no, you cannot do that. You know, we never denied him to try anything. So over the course of the years, his mother and I, we started buying properties. And he would look at us working, and he would want to work. So we got him a hard hat. I bought him a tool belt, some power tools. And when we buy a property, he goes in, he replaces the outlet covers. He'll hang ceiling fans, drop ceilings. Now, he didn't have to go to school with us all. I mean, this was something that he just picked up. You know, when I was in the automotive field before I retired, if I'm working on a car at home, he's right there in the garage with me. So he loves to work with his hands. And one year for his birthday, I bought him one of those die-cast metal model cars. And he and I put the car together. Then about a month later, I bought him another one. Before I had a chance to get home and to work on a car with him, the car was assembled. You know, I mean, we're talking with, you know, the small screws and screwdrivers. And just him doing that, looking at the box and saying, okay, this is how it goes. This is how it's going to look. You know, that, you know, it definitely improved his fine motor skills. He's verbal too, you know, when he's around people that he knows.
Right.
One of the things that keeps him comfortable, he likes water. So he walks around with water bottles full of water. He'll just shake them. He'll drink the water, put more water in the bottle, you know. He's got one water bottle. Okay, he's 26. He'll be 27 in August. He's had the bottle probably 7 years. That one bottle, that's his favorite bottle, you know. But like I said, for his birthdays, I would give him those die-cast model cars. He would put them together. He has them on display in his room, you know. So my grandsons cannot touch them. He'll say no, you know.
Yeah.
He also loves music. You know, if it's gospel or jazz, that's his favorite.
Okay.
You know, rap music, hip hop, he would not play it on his stereo. You know, he uses that the augmented chat box to help him form his words and make a complete sentence. And he's one of those, you know, just his son. Okay, son, I need to, you know, when you get home, make sure you call me.
Yeah,
you only said it one time. You know, he had a teacher in school who would not sign off with him coming home by himself, and she was comparing her son to my son because her son is also autistic, but he was—I mean—he's more severe, you know, on the spectrum. And her rationale was, well, if a pit bull gets loose in the neighborhood, he can't run and get away. I'm like, if a pit bull got loose in your neighborhood, you couldn't run away. <You know? laughs> I'm like,
Ronnie, I know, I can tell. Oh my goodness, that you are proud. You know, certainly of your son, but I would argue that you should also be proud of yourself. And the amazing work that you've done as a parent, and I think that is certainly an inspirational story. And I think to that point, one of the things that we are hearing, even with the various and sundry levels of struggle that parents and grandparents are going through with children, grandchildren, and the like, that this is wonderful work. And we certainly salute you in sharing your story. Let me go to Tracy calling from D.C. Tracy, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I live in D.C. and my daughter was diagnosed at 3 years old. I've learned through my journey, now she's 21, that we all learn differently. And the really big obstacle that I faced in D.C. is that, like was said before, the support system, you don't have a lot of support. And in addition to that, you don't, back then you didn't have a lot of developmental pediatrician. Back then I was lucky enough to find one. And there was a program that they have at the University of Maryland. It was the Children's Developmental Clinic. And they would have a spring and fall and spring semester where they would have students who were being teachers, speech therapists, OTs, high school students who were doing community service, and you would fill out a sheet about what things that your child needed to work on. And then we also, in that group, we had a parent session. And we also, this was the time when the internet was coming about, we had a listserv and we would all share our stories. We would, you know, you would be with people who were going through the same things that you were. And they would give you different strategies, give you names of doctors. And living in D.C., I was just astounded that none of this was going on at any of the universities in D.C. We went there for several years, and it really, really helped me go through everything I went through. And when my daughter was diagnosed at Children's Hospital, the doctor told me that my daughter would never walk, talk, or go to the bathroom by herself. Mm-hmm. And the one philosophy that I've learned is that expectations, you know, you don't know what someone can do until you try it. My daughter loves to sing. She paints. She draws. She get her own website where she sells her own pictures of note cards and everything. It's just that I heard this thing of that I listened to your show on at 7, and then I switched to the HDR in my car, but that parents don't know how to get the resources in D.C. I think there's a big disconnect between the teachers, people who are do the meetings for the parents, and just with the pandemic, you learned that a lot of parents kids don't have the internet.
Yeah. Well, that's why we're having this conversation now, Tracy, and we are going to be posting some of the resources that Alyssa mentioned earlier in the program, and those resources will be on whur.com by 8:30 along with this entire podcast conversation. So thank you so much for continuing to, you know, raise questions and awareness. And certainly we wish you and, you know, your daughter the very best of health. I only have a few minutes left, but I did want to have both of you share some final thoughts. You know, we started with Dr. Alexander, so Dr. Alexander, I'll let you have the next to the last word. Some final thoughts about where we are with the autism spectrum and support and the like.
I have a deep reverence for the autism community, particularly the Black autism community. And if I had to say one thing is, your voice matters, your story matters, and it's important to share your story with every doctor, every school-based personnel that you interact with, because we want to know who your children are. Parents are the experts on their children. You are not alone, and we want to hear from you. So look out for an all-call for the Black autism community nationwide from Howard University. It's coming soon, and we'll share those resources with you from our end.
And Alyssa, 20 seconds, your final thoughts.
Sure.
I'll be brief, and that's the what I've heard echoed here today, and what I live by is to presume competence, right? It's important to understand that, you know, our children have amazing gifts, just as many people do, and they have some challenges. And how do we support those challenges so that the world can benefit from all of their amazing gifts? And so if you're a parent, keep doing what you're doing and lifting that up and you know, lifting up your child's unbelievable strengths and gifts that they bring to this world.
Alyssa Ware, Dr. Chantra Alexander, thank you both for sharing with us.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, April 19th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.